Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Bottoming, the LGBTQ mental health podcast about rock bottoming and beyond.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BottomingPod or visit bottomingpodcast.com for more content relating to each episode.
We've also added a support page to the website to direct you to the right place if you're struggling or need someone to talk to.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts. Hi, my name's Brendan.
And I am Matthew, and our pronouns are he and him.
Sorry, we've just tried a lot of times to just do that basic intro. Oh, Jesus. We did it well, though, so...
Surprise! This is officially season four.
It's the started, baby.
It has started. Now, in the past, you know, we've built up and we've drip-fed and we've teased and we've done all the bits and... We're not doing that this season.
So we're doing no dripping, no feeding, no.
We're just gonna go. We're going in raw, just from the off.
My mother listens to this, Matthew.
As we mentioned in our Will Young Mental Health Awareness Week bonus episode, the last season particularly really took out of us, and we needed a bit of a break. And we've come into this season thinking,
let's take the pressure off. We think along with the output, which was a lot. Which we talked about last episode, we think the structure might have been putting too much pressure on us as well in terms of figuring out how many guests we're going to have at a certain time, and we need to do them every 2 weeks and it needs to be very strict and professional. Mm-hmm. And while that was really good for building the audience and building the content and, you know, seeming reliable to an extent, we've decided to take the what's it called?
Take your own medicine.
No. Take the bike things off the bike. What's the stabilizers? We're taking the stabilizers off the bike. Maybe if that's what that means.
That's the right metaphor.
And we're running free with doing our own thing. So we're free riding now. With, you know, you might get an episode in 2 weeks. You might get one in 3 weeks. You might get one in four. You might get one twice a week. Very unlikely, but
yeah, we don't know, and you don't know, and that is going to be the joy of the season, because all of the guests that we have lined up are all amazing, and it just gives us all a little bit more flexibility, less pressure, and keeps you on your toes. Which
absolutely,
keeps and it us gives on our you, toes too.
yeah, more importantly, and it gives you even more of a reason to subscribe, because
who knows?
Who knows when we're going to be releasing
these surprise drops? Worked for Beyonce, so you know. There we go.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
today's episode, we're speaking to Jack Rook, who only came on my radar recently with the trailer of Big Boys, the Channel 4 show, which is coming out this week, or it'll be tomorrow if you're listening on the Wednesday. And and then I've gone back to listen and watch a few of his previous work, and very blown away, to be honest. He's very talented, hilarious. He's got a great story, full of experiences, and he makes a joke about writing a memoir at 25, but he's been through a lot, so like why the fuck not write a memoir at 25?
Amen.
We had fun, didn't we?
Yeah, it was a really, really fun interview, actually. It was just super easy from the start, and also the amount of things that we touched on that were not in the questions, such as the, you know, life-changing experience that was Charlie XCX at Alexandra Palace, for example.
Let's ride.
Our joint love of Broad City. Oh. All of those things, as well as all of the amazing work he's done and the incredible new season that's coming up on Channel 4.
Yeah.
So before we get into that very meaty interview, how are you being?
Yeah, I was actually just sitting thinking about it, because I haven't thought about that for a second. But yeah, I'm good, because so I finally did my exam last Monday. It was very difficult. It was hard. And so because that was so difficult, I just signed off myself.
Because you just never get time, do you? Do you know?
Yeah.
And what did we do to get some downtime?
We went to Brighton, and that was beautiful. It was fantastic.
Yeah, one of our very, very good friends, Ben, also known as Benjamin Dean, esteemed, award-nominated, all-round icon, children's author, and soon to be young adult author with his new book, The King Is Dead, which is out in July. We had a gorgeous day. We went on the... I was going to say slot machines. We didn't do that, did we? We went on the dance mat. Well, you went on the dance mat.
Yeah.
We had a little...
Very talented, thank you.
And we had some cocktails, because I also had the day off work, and it was bloody gorgeous, wasn't it?
But tonight, actually, we're going to Busy Being Black live at Shoreditch House with Travis Alabanza. And can't bloody wait. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've wanted the... see Travis speak for a long time, haven't we? So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and also seeing Josh in person.
Yeah, but how are you, babes?
I'm all good. The only thing I'm going to share that was eventful, apart obviously from our gorgeous trip to Brighton, is that I finally convinced my GP to give me more hay fever medication after years of suffering, so now I'm on higher dosages.
Has it made a difference?
And not enormously, no, but we're on the way to eventually getting one of those injections that apparently is like a unicorn to try and find in the NHS. But you're basically given like injections to build your immune system up, and it can basically cure almost, but never actually. So that was a big jump, yeah, for me. I mean, other than that, I've just been working. We've been having a good time in the sun. We went to Brighton.
Yeah.
Organising more episodes. Mm-hmm. Some very exciting episodes.
So another thing that drew us to Jack and the topic was that it's about grief, really. One of the main core themes of the show is grief, and because Jack lost his dad at a young age and also his best friend to suicide. So because we haven't spoken about that before, we've never wanted to like latch on to someone just because they've had a story. The fact that Jack's got a TV show coming out and he speaks about it in this way and uses comedy in this way is what I guess attracted us to the topic and gave us the opportunity to talk about that, because neither of us have really lost anyone close to us like that before.
One of the reasons obviously we do this podcast is so we can like laugh at some of the maybe more difficult things we haven't had the opportunity to do this side of it before.
Mm-hmm.
And not that we want to like laugh at death and laugh at grief, because that's not what it is, but Jack kind of sums up really nicely as like the reasoning why that's the way he does things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, why he's put that into his work. So it was just, yeah, as Brendan said, it was amazing to chat to him. And also shout out to Deborah from Channel 4, who was, yeah, just fantastic in organising this for us.
That's so sweetheart.
Mm. And I guess with that, we'll just hand it right over. So here is Jack.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jack Rook. I'm a comedian, writer. My pronouns are he, him, and my position is undecided. I could be a top, I could be a bottom, I could be both, I could be neither. Quite honestly, I've not got the energy or the mental coherence to try and figure it out this side of 30.
Do you know what? That's the best way, isn't it? Just roll with it.
Yeah, 100%.
Just roll with it. I mean, yeah. I saw Charlie XCX the other night, and I was in a group of lovely queer men who were kind of going around one by one, sort of in the spirit of Charlie XCX, sticking their flag in, you know, what they were, and it got to me, and I just thought, I need a drink. I don't know. We've got 7 tops here and 3 bottoms. I can't be bothered to compete. I'm not.
Wow,
I'm,
that proportion.
That proportion.
That is, and at Charlie XCX as well. That is rare.
That's rare.
Put it this way: there were some boys that got the bus, and there were some boys that walked, and I was walking. So you know. Anyway, so
Matthew was at also.
Yeah, I was at Charlie XCX. Wasn't it incredible?
You?
Yeah.
Were you the one who dropped their poppers on the Great Northern Railway train? Somebody dropped their poppers on the Northern Railway train. I honestly thought my head was swelling up.
My favourite bit was the trans flag with Princess Diana on.
Ah, die.
I thought that was a proper moment, though. Yeah,
it was. Very touching. Very touching, because it's always good to remember Princess. I went to Paris 2-3 weeks ago, and I went with my friend Siobhan, and we were like, let's do all the touristy spots. And I was like, no, I want to stand at the foot of the tunnel and cry for 2 minutes. I want to go on a Princess Diana tour. Like, what does she do? She went to the Ritz, apparently that's burnt down. Like, I'd never been to Paris before, and I just felt the spirit of Ardai the whole time.
One of our best mates did exactly the same a few weeks ago, and he went with a mate, and she was like, why would you want to go and see where she died? And he was like, because Princess Diana, like, why would I not want to go and see the tunnel?
Have you heard of respect? Have you heard of paying one's respects? Thank you. You know, Christ alive. All I really want my show about grief to do is empower people to get the Eurostar to Paris. To Diana.
There we go.
Well, that was going to be the first question before we got onto the new show. Which comes out this week. This episode will be coming out this week as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about the theatre shows it stemmed from? So for anyone that doesn't know, Happy Hour and Good Grief.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, all of my career kind of started as being a live performer and doing like fringe comedy theatre type stuff and open mics. Mm. And for a while, I often identify as a recovering spoken word artist because I did some really shite poems for a little bit. and I would sort of do these poems, but they would essentially be like funny lists. And I just would sort of expand upon the list and expand upon the anecdotes. And then I started writing a sort of full-length show because I was studying journalism and I wanted to make a documentary about grief with my nan. Mm. And I wanted to make a documentary about my dad passed away when I was 15 and my nan was 80, and we both had almost quite similar experiences of what it's like to lose a parent and lose a child in the way people treated us and in the way people kind of couldn't really broach the subject of grief with us in a way that didn't feel like they thought we were the most awkward blobs in the world. So we always found it really funny, like having 26 lasagnas turn up at your door the week your dad's died, like that sort of mad British stuff, because people don't really know how to help, but they're helping anyway in some weird wonderful way. And then so I wanted to make a documentary, but I didn't have any money, and when I graduated from uni, I couldn't keep on like trying to steal equipment and steal cameras and mics and whatever. So I like filmed the bulk of this interview with my nan just before I graduated, like literally like with 2 weeks to go till they wouldn't let me back on campus so I could like use all the tech. And then tried to make this documentary with her about grief and couldn't do it. And then because I'd been doing like little bits of like open mics, whatever. I met this woman from the Arts Council who was like, we could give you money to make it like a live comedy theatre show that where you spoke and did your little poems and your little stories and then played snippets of film and multimedia footage throughout. And I was like, well, great. I'll just become a performance artist. What a wonderful career like diversion. And so, yeah, I kind of didn't, I've not done any journalism ever since, really. And took that show, got some funding to take that show to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And I was in like the good grief for the first show was in the worst slot in the tiniest venue. There was definite damp. I do think it's like the long term risk of that is that I have got asthma and sometimes I need the brown pump too. And it was definitely spending a whole month in a cave. And then the show kind of, we opened the show and it was like, oh yeah, I've got 12 people in. And then it was like 18 people. And then it was like 30 people. And then like, I mean, it was only a 50 seater, but by like the second week we'd had like, five-star reviews or something stupid, and then all these industry people came in, and it was so funny because people like I couldn't really fit the mold of what you're supposed to do when you have a theatre show like that, that you're supposed to, like, when the stage review you, it's like, what theatre school did you go to, who did you train with, what class are you of this, blah blah blah, and I had none of the stats, so I was like one of those Pokemon cards that slipped through the gap. They're like, who is she? Where she, who is she? And it was quite nice because I sort of managed to fuck quite a lot of theatre people, theatre snobs off, which I think actually is sort of like led me to falling more into the comedy side of things, where it's a bit more like you can come from any background and any route. So I took it to Edinburgh, and then there was a day where I think one of the Radio 4 comedy commissioners came in and really loved it, and she was sat next to someone from the New York Times. And I think she was like, shit, we should commission this because he's managed to like actually get like good press in. And then I wrote it as a Radio 4 special, which I think came out about 5 years ago now. And then naturally it just then went to sort of a TV show. But then, in the middle of that time, I wrote a second show called Happy Hour, which I think Big Boy's story-wise is a bit more based on, which was a kind of live letter that I read to the audience, where the audience was sort of a friend of mine that I went to uni with, sort of talking about, you know, that whole uni experience and going there and coming out. And at the core of it, it was a sort of show about like a gay straight friendship about sort of two boys being friends and helping each other and having very individual things going on, but kind of doing it side by side the whole time, which I really liked as an impetus for a sort of live show. But then Big Boys was sort of born out of that.
But amazing.
I also always feel like a real bit of a disclaimer, because I really love the Edinburgh Fringe and I'm really sort of proud to have come from it, but I also at the same time, to like anyone listening who might be in the arts, like, it's an immensely inaccessible festival. Like, it's a real, it costs so much money, it's like it puts people into thousands of pounds worth of debt. I was going to say hundreds of thousands of pounds, but if you're in hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of debt, then you've really gone.
You've done something wrong.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're
sure
train prices now.
Exactly. Well, with your own, but I know it's hard enough just to get to Newcastle, let alone the extra 45 minutes up. But, you know, I feel a bit odd about the Fringe, because when I went, I was at the last year where Ideas Tap existed. If you ever remember Ideas Tap, which was this like cultural fund for, you know, helping young people make creative stuff and come from all sorts of backgrounds, and I was the last one to sort of like kind of get in that era, and actually at every time of my sort of arts career I've benefited from public money. I've always benefited from that sort of outreach stuff and Arts Council England funds, and Big Boys, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, was co-funded with the BFI Young Audiences Content Fund, which is, you know, a specific bit of money to like help people make TV for young people that resonated with young people, and that was specifically for, you know, young voices as well. And then, you know, every juncture I get there, it looks like the government are trying to bloody shut it down or cut it or whatever. So I always just get in the door, and then I'm like trying to bring people up with me, and then, you know, the fuckers have shut the door.
The door closes.
Yeah. That's quite
And when you're the last one in, you know you'll be the first one out. So yeah. It's a precarious situation for me even.
We really hope not. We listened to the adaptation of Good Grief for BBC Radio 4, and I really loved those clips, actually, with you and your nan. It was just really touching, and it does add that just a different layer, especially to like a stand-up comedy show. And it's kind of like brings you into the memory of it as a listener, or I guess as a participant in the audience as well. It would have done the same. But we actually did an episode with Rosie Jones, unbelievably talented, gorgeous.
You've got to warn me when you're going to mention my girlfriend, you know. You absolutely have to warn me when you're going to mention her. That's awkward.
So sorry. But we had a conversation all about the power of humour, and which was obviously incredible. But listening to your show, listening to the jokes about, you know, all of the lasagnas that you were judging and burying a bag for life because it outlived your dad, and your bereavement counsellor farting in a session with you and your mum, it seems like you have a good perspective on the dark things. Have you always used humour in this way to frame your experiences?
Yeah, I think so, and completely not by design. I think just because naturally that was mine and my mum's coping mechanism. It's, you know, I've not become a comedian because I've been trying to find a way of making it funny. Like, it was funny. It was just funny to go through those experiences. It was funny to you know, go through the sort of shock of loss sometimes. Like, you know, I always think laughter and crying operates on the exact same line. They tread the exact same line, and I can be doing both at the same time. Mm-hmm. I just got a text come through. Did you guys hear that?
No, thankfully.
Oh, it's an old friend. Goodbye. and yeah, so like, I've always just felt like it's quite a funny experience to kind of go through grief, and especially within like a sort of British lens, because historically, I mean, when I went through it was like 2009 2010, and we didn't have as much of a kind of open, broad mental health conversation as we perhaps do now. So it was really tricky, and people didn't know how to treat me, and I did sort of feel like I walked into school and was like the boy whose dad died, and that was just interesting, rather than being like the fat boy who might be gay. Like it really, like, you know, it kind of gave me like a new identity at school. It meant like all the lads were a bit nice to me, didn't like slam doors in my face anymore. So you know, it's a tricky one, because I also like, I always want the show to be funny and full of jokes, and then anything I write, I always want to be full of jokes. I love writing jokes. I always feel more like a comedian than anything else, and because I've written about so many sad topics, I think there's like a little contingency in the comedy comedian that are like, you're not a comedian, you're just a bloody sad boy or something like that. I don't know. You know, I've always been like, no, I've written some really good dick jokes, or really good, like, you know, Alison Hammond goldfish jokes or whatever. So yeah, but you know, I think the comedy is just always naturally in those experiences, and me and my mum would just constantly be laughing and crying and laughing and crying and finding weird things that people would text, like I remember somebody texting my mom, basically being like, I can't imagine what it's like to be you. And I felt like after my dad died, I remember thinking, yeah, because you're a boring fucking bitch, Karen, and my mom's not. And yeah, we're going like, what do you mean by that text? What do you, I can't imagine what it's like to be you. Like, people don't know how to deal with it. And they don't know what, you know, they don't know exactly how to like tread sensitively around loss. So I'm always kind of hoping that, you know, what I write is both funny and silly and, like, you know, pushes the mark of those sort of awkward, weird encounters, but isn't like trivializing anything, and is still sort of giving space and time for the, you know, the processing side of things, and the actual, you know, the stuff that is true, which was that, you know, ultimately it was fucking awful. And but, you know, the coping mechanism when saying it's fucking awful is to find some sort of like laughter and comfort in
I mean, that's I think we're gonna say the same thing, like, that's why we set this podcast up. Like, that was the whole reason for setting this up, because we both had a really shit time, very different experiences, and then but we'd always like make the worst jokes about things to be like
Yeah.
Yeah, for some people that doesn't work, and other people it's the way that they need to do it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I mean, I really self-indulgently wrote a book. Which is such a... I still can't get over I did that, because I'm just like, you absolute narcissist, you wrote a book about being 25. Like, shut up. But at the same time, I like really wanted there to be a really funny book on grief, because I was like, yeah. It's the only way that I've tried reading other sort of memoirs, or even like some even memoirs that I think they're comic ones, that I'm being a shady bitch. They weren't. They weren't. Well, it didn't make me laugh. And I was like, no, I want to write one called Cheer the Fuck Up, because I remember my mum always telling me that, you know.
Yeah.
But in a way where you're like saying Cheer the Fuck Up out of love, like out of almost like desperation, out of rooting for someone, out of being scared because you don't know. Like, you know, me and my mum would constantly just be like, oh, come on, let's cheer the fuck up. Come on, yeah. Like, pull yourself together. And you know, I love that sentiment. And I think that's sort of, I've managed to kind of drip that into Big Boys, you know, those two characters. Mm. They'll have a moment and then they'll be like, right, come on, come the fuck on, Bridget. Yeah. We're getting back. Like, because life moves on. It continues. And you kind of, you've got to find those coping mechanisms that aren't going to allow you to become too saccharine or schmaltzy or, you know, bogged down or sentimental or whatever. Like, there are always moments for that. But ultimately, you know, you got to keep rolling.
Mm. You kind of touched on this a little bit when you were talking about going back to school after your dad died, and about the loneliness or the change of how people treated you. It was Mental Health Awareness Week earlier this month, and we spoke to Will Young about it, and this year's topic is loneliness. You've mentioned, as I said, about like the isolation that you feel. Can you expand on that a little bit? Like, whether, because going back to school, you're obviously surrounded by people. So it's not the physical isolation and loneliness, is it? It's more of the, I guess, mental and emotional isolation.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've always thought that all of my work, the only thing that would string together a lot of the dodgy things I've done, the good things I've done, and all the work that I've made in the field of it, is that it's all actually about loneliness. It's all about that experience of being like, am I the only one going through this at this time? And the answer is yes and no. Obviously not, you know, but you're sometimes not, you know, you don't know that you're not the only one going through it when you're going through it. And I think loneliness is something that, whether or not, I mean, I've experienced it numerous times in my life, and I do experience it all the time. I mean, I even felt like there was a little brief moment at Charlie XCX when I was surrounded by 7 tops and 3 buttons. So I was like, God, actually, I feel like this sort of odd one. I feel like this kind of weird, like, lonely boy. I'm not here to sort of, you know, like shag anyone. I'm here to dance to, you know, party for you. But, you know, and I think loneliness is a really, I actually thought some of those Mental Health Awareness Week themes can be pretty whack. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, some of them I'm always like, oh, come the fuck on.
Yeah.
And then actually the loneliness one, I was like, yeah, to be fair, that's the biggest fucking epidemic in this country, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. And it's why I get, you know, it's always a complex one, because I also feel like, in terms of the kind of queer lens and queer representation, especially talking about a TV show, which I've been talking about now for weeks because, you know, I've written one, but like people really, I have this feeling of like, I love the fact that there's so much queer representation on screen. And the reason why is because for the people who live in rural, secluded, coastal, like areas where there aren't like a gay club around the corner, or there isn't like any physical manifestation of space for queer people, like telly is everything to a certain extent. Like, that's where you're going to see yourself reflected. And whilst I can, you know, roll my eyes at certain stuff and scoff at, you know, we need more representation in real life, not on telly, like, it also, like, TV is an immensely incredible medium at helping plug the gap of loneliness, or certainly like fill a real valid space in people's lives. And I've always benefited from that myself. Anytime I felt lonely, I think I've always sought out solace in television. Like, I was really, really mentally and physically unwell after my second Edinburgh Fringe show, Happy Hour, which I never did again after doing at the Fringe. I put all my energy into turning it into Big Boys, because I found it immensely exposing. I thought it was a huge overshare. I thought I'd pandered to sort of the like theatre people being like, give us your pain, give us everything, give us, and actually I gave way too much. Mm-hmm. And I had a real awful period in September, probably about September 2017 to like December 2018. It was probably a good 14 months of real heavy up and down nidge. Up and down edge. That makes sense.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah.
And I think Broad City saved my life, quite honestly.
Oh. Yes.
Like, I watched Broad City and lost myself in it. I think at one point I even considered drawing fan art. Now that's how you knew I had depression, because I can't draw for fucking shit. Like, I was so...
Please draw some.
Drawing Alana with lots of marijuana leaves all over her fucking head. But, you know, Broad City to me was like... Broad City, I think, has probably been one of the biggest inspirations for me behind writing Big Boys, because I love writing. There's something really beautiful about two friends. I also think maybe it's why when I read your guys' pitch for me to come on the podcast, I was like, oh, this is sweet. This is like two people who clearly know their shit and are like making something fun, because the website looks very fun, but also is about something serious. And like, I've always felt like I love going on a big night out with one friend. I went out last Friday with my friend Joel, who's a slightly new friend of mine, and we just had the absolute best time and giggled all day. And there's something so nice about like the beauty in a duo. And anyway, like Broad City, when I didn't have anyone to be in my duo, I just watched that show really like lonely and depressed, and then spoke to more and more people that had also watched it and loved it. And it's like probably like the one thing I can remember really made me want to write Big Boys the most was watching that and thinking I had enough ideas that I could make something similar. But yeah. Yeah. God, what was the fucking question? I just went on a rant about Broad City.
No, honestly, that's one of our favourite shows. And again, when we first started this in 2018, 2019, like I think we were still watching it at that point.
It was like around the time of like the Sad Lamp episode, if you remember that.
Do I? She basically like foils her room and Sad Lamp's even stronger. Yeah. Just incredible. Like, and also all the ways in which they spoke about mental health in a way that just didn't feel clunky or like she's just like, shit, gotta take my Annie Depps. Like,
yeah.
gotta take my pills. And like, you know, Big Boys arguably has to land that stuff a bit heavier because of the context of how we're writing it, and it's British and it's, you know, Channel 4 and there's like certain stuff I've got to like, you know, be a bit more sensitive about that. I think when you're those two girls and you're, you know, those two girls are riding off charisma, uniqueness, nerve and talent.
Yeah.
Yes. You know what I mean? If any of Rue's girls want to learn how to be C-U-N-T, you just got to watch Broad City.
That is it.
Yeah.
Because even, do you know what I also love about Broad City? Just because this is now like a fan show. like, seasons 1 to 3, I'm really like, I love Abby, but oh my God, Alana. But then the last two seasons, it switches for me in a way where I don't stop loving Alana, but I feel like that the character of Abby really has like a proper character journey. And then by the 100%. Absolute end of it, I love them both almost 50-50. I wouldn't be able to choose one. If you gave me a gun and said I had to shoot one, I'd shoot myself. Oh God, don't say that on the mental health podcast. I mean, disclaimer, shoot no
Cheer
one.
Cheer the fuck up, Jack.
Shoot no one. Cheer up, Jack. But anyway, I really thought that if there's anybody who wants to like watch what I think is the greatest show of our generation, then I'd say Broad City.
Mm. And I think after the election, just very quickly on that, just to continue that, after the election, I know that they shifted the last two seasons, didn't they, kind of the tone of it, because they were just like living their lives. And I read a really good interview, I think it was before either the fourth or final season, when they were like, actually, we've got this absolute beast now that is the president that wants to take away our rights and do this and do that. Like, we can't just keep like lolling and joking about all of these really serious things. We have to change it. So
100%. I just think they were really conscious the whole time of what they were doing, and they did it right. And one of the most incredible scenes in Broad City is when they are being escorts to women going into family planning abortion clinics, because they're these, like, religious fucking, you know, protesters, anti-choice. Mm-hmm. Oh, I do get confused between choice and pro-life.
Oh. Pro-life. Mm.
Those ones. Yeah. The bad guys, basically. The bad And they were like escorting them in and like just having like a really casual, funny chat and then telling these protesters to go fuck themselves. It's just so fun. And I think it's, really, you know, when you can find a space to be both political and funny, that so much of the industry is about shutting that stuff down. And when you can hit the right stride and hit the right time, which I think last week Lisa McGee did in the final special hour-long episode of Derry Girls, she did it.
I still haven't watched it.
Oh, Matthew, it's one of the greatest episodes of British comedy of all time. Like, I think Lisa McGee has paved the way for like my show to be able to say what it needs to and be able to pave the way for lots of like shows that are set in a geographical specific working class area, but that can like celebrate optimism and hope and and you know how systems of fucking bollocks stop people living their like lives in as many happy peaceful ways as they want, and how we've got to kind of, you know, we've got to be on their back still type thing. But yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, what you were saying about, you know, the regional representation for people, I grew up in a really small town, so, and in the 90s, so there was, you know, scraps to watch and whatever it was, watching the gay people getting, you know, hate crimed or whatever, so it wasn't very positive. So this show, I mean, already looks like it would have been revolutionary for me to watch as a kid. Can you tell us about the show, please?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what, I think like Big Boys for me, it's about how I can say some jokes that are on the side of queer people that I hope a lot of straight people can find funny, if that makes sense. So like, I've written it for the straight people, like, you know, I've written it for everyone, but you know, it's about, I suppose, I really love opening the door between everyone, like, because and I think it's just because realistically in my life, the friendships that I've had that have supported me, there's plenty of queer people in there, but there's also plenty of straight people that have like really stood by me and chosen to, and you know, they don't need like overly you know, a huge fanfare or a big pat on the back for not being a dick, but you know, I still want to celebrate them as much as anyone else. So my mind, Big Boys, it's kind of like a show that I'm hoping helps both sort of sides kind of feel seen, if that makes sense. And it's obviously immensely important to me to have like a lot of queer like comedy and queer joy and like lots of fun in there, like, you know, I've tried to be as aware of the tropes that happen in a lot of queer shows as possible, and I've tried to make sure I don't fall into them. I feel like some people fall into them completely unknowingly and unintentionally, and others don't know about the trope and don't give a fucking shit and do it anyway. And like, I've tried to always be someone who's, you know, trying to be conscious of how I tell a story that hopefully will resonate with people, because that is ultimately why you kind of want to write a show like Big Boys. You know, it's so nice to work with Channel 4 on a show that, like, the first line of Big Boys is the first line of the theatre show 7 years before. Like, it's nice that it's gone from 48 seater to, like, you know, however many people watch it on Thursday night and onwards. So that's cool. But yeah, it's a show, a university based campus show, comedy drama about two boys that meet who are at very different ends of the sort of, I suppose, inverted commas, spectrum of masculinity. And they kind of had to learn to live with each other, because they're thrown together, and also then they kind of learn to sort of love each other and learn to help one another and support one another, and this really incredible friendship of, I suppose, what I call protectionism, right, which is a word apparently I've made up, because apparently that's like an economic finance word for like helping people not pay tax, but I'm claiming the word protectionism.
Yeah, take it.
To be about, you know, when both sides are supporting one another. You know, the gay character's the lead to a certain extent, and the straight best friend, which is the sort of trope that I've tried to flip, is they're both looking after one another just as much, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really lovely sentiment. And arguably, if anything, the gay character, Jack, who's slightly based on me, and Danny, the straight character, Like, Jack sometimes doesn't know how to help Danny as much as Danny knows how to help Jack. And I also think that's fine, because sometimes you don't exactly know what the right things are to say and you don't know what to do in those moments, but you just got to kind of be there and show up. And when you're in your late teens and early 20s, you're not going to know all those answers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might not even know them in your late 50s, like.
So
it's sort of about these two boys and then the ensemble of other characters, which make it so fun for me to write. And, you know, we've got a character called Yemi, who's played by, well, I should say, so Jack's played by Dylan Llewellyn from Derry Girls, the wee English fella. Danny is played by John Poynting, who is one of my best friends in real life and is like the straight guy that I often, if there's like a huge big queer event on Instagram story, I'm always looking, he's there. And I'm and his wife Sarah is in a sort of queer performance collective called Figs and Wigs, so you know they do amazing. A lot of like the kind of cabaret scene stuff. He is the honorary straight boy around here. He's proved himself. And then a really phenomenal comic actor, Alyssa Adele, plays Yemi, who's the sort of like, when I first properly moved to London, I'm from Watford, but like London is still like 20 minutes down the road type thing. When I first properly moved into London, I've met so many queer kids that had done it all, seen it all, got the t-shirt, been to GAY at 16, snuck in, fake ID, bam, bam, bam. By the time they got to 1920, they were like, I'm here to build my business. I'm here to build my empire. And like so many queer people I knew like that who just done it all in their teens. So like they hit their early 20s and he very much is that character. And I was really conscious. He kind of helps everyone. He kind of guides everyone, but he's also like, I'm not your guru. Like, I'm here for my own shit. I'm here for my own ambitions. You guys do whatever the fuck you want. I'm always going to do what I want. Like, you know, I'm not a cunt. I'll let you in type thing.
Then
a fantastic character called Corinne. He's played by Azuka Hoyle, who is part of the original cast of Six, the musical, if you guys have ever seen that. She is honestly a bit of a revelation. I feel like she's one of the funniest, sweetest, most incisive actors I've ever worked with. And she plays a character called Corinne, who's Scottish and like a bit of a nerd, but actually is desperate to let her hair down and go absolutely wild. Yeah. And then Katie Wicks, who's, I think, like the biggest comedy legend ever, plays a character called Jules, who's the head of the SU, who's this weird, mad woman who's slightly based on my favourite sitcom character of all time, who's Alice Tinker from The Vicar of Dibley.
She's amazing.
The big boys version of Alice Tinker. She's always getting it wrong, but somehow completely right type thing. And then lastly, Camille Kajuri plays my mum, Peggy. And for me, that's like one of the most important characters I could ever write. And there's a sort of storyline in there of an older working class woman who is learning how to be a widow and going through that sort of process and trying to sort of still do it in fun, silly, glamorous, you know. Her future is just as big as the kids are, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also Camille played Jackie Tyler in Doctor Who, and I am a bit of a Doctor Who fan. I wouldn't say I'm like on the hardcore god tier level. I'm definitely like in the middle, you know. But like as a kid, it was like mine and my dad's show that we watched a lot, because he like loved Doctor Who growing up. And also it's like, you know, it's always been a bit of a queer show. Shout out to Ms. Russell. So, you know, it's so nice, because it's basically, in my mind, Jackie Tyler's got a gay son, which I'm hoping, all I really want is the Doctor Who like queer fans to just be like, I fought for that to happen. And I fought for it to happen for all of us. It's a lovely, like, lovely sort of ensemble cast show that has these sort of two boys at the heart of it figuring themselves out.
How did you find like writing for a TV show? Because I know this was your first TV gig, right? How was that in comparison to writing your shows before?
I have to sound humble, but I absolutely loved it. And I think I was quite good at it, actually.
Yeah.
See, that's a Britishness, isn't it?
I feel like I'm better at it because it's feeds into more of my pool of influences. Like, I watched loads of... When I was a kid, I never went to plays. We never went to the theatre. We never went to art galleries. We never went to... I didn't see any of that shit that I ended up trying to sort of do weird, like, performance art theatre stuff. And I had no basis on it at all. Mm-hmm. But, like, I had watched every episode of The Vicar of Dibley 8 times. And I had watched all of Only Fools and Horses 10 times. And I had watched, like... loads of like sort of big comedies all throughout growing up, and Gavin and Stacey. And so I feel like actually my cultural references were always TV comedies and sitcoms and music. And you know, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but in the show I use this sort of narrative device where ultimately it's a bit like I've written one really long song. It's like Big Boys to me, like the narrative device I use, I sort of use a technique that most pop songs use. And soundtracking the show was a huge, huge deal to me. And the director, Jim Archer, is honestly my favorite person I've ever worked with in my entire career. I do not trust anyone more. He is the most incisive, kind, thoughtful, funny man ever. And me and him have spent, like, you know, about 4 years working together on Big Boys, and going from pilot stage to script stage to development to recommission, like commission, recommissioned, going here, shows dropped, going there. Like, we've really, you know, he's been on the journey the whole time. And me and him had just spent years sharing Spotify playlists and going, I want this song in here, and I want this song in here. And, you know, we both loved that kind of like late noughties, early tens, the kind of like, you know, Metronomy, Hot Chip, MIA, Santi Gold, James Blake era of music.
Oh my God, amazing.
It's like soundtracks the whole show. And thankfully, we've managed to do a kind of little deal with Spotify, where Spotify are going to host like the official playlist of the show and all the songs from it, which is cool.
So
and I've tried to also have, like, you know, a lot of queer music in there and a lot of like new artists and stuff like that. So, you know, that sort of side of it, those are the things where I actually feel quite good at my job, because I'm better at writing something for TV because I know what my influences are, and I think I have a greater sense of my instincts than I would when I go into the theater arena. And, you know, I feel like I'm being like really mean about theater. Like, I'm immensely grateful for a lot of fringe theaters and places like the Roundhouse, where I started writing on their kind of young people's courses, places like Soho Theater, where I like did like loads of my early kind of comedy stuff. So I'm immensely grateful for a lot of the theater scene. At the same time, fuck them.
It's just not for you.
Fuck them. They can be a right snobby bunch sometimes too.
How many episodes is Big Boys?
There's six episodes. Okay. And we're kind of releasing them in couplets, which I like. So you know that, and I think it's nice because they kind of feel like a lot of the two eps kind of, one and two go hand in hand, three and four go hand in hand, five and six go hand in hand, which is really nice. So, and then the whole thing will be available though as a box set after episode two airs on Channel 4 this Thursday, which is fun.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Amazing. Exciting. Did you ever watch Girls or Looking?
No. Do you know what? I'm quite bad. Apart from Broad City, I haven't got a huge depth of American TV influences that I know.
So that's
I
like the
change.
Holy Trinity for me. Because it was kind of, it was all the same era.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was like, and they used to do, I think it was maybe when it was on like Sky Atlantic at one point, but yeah, they used to do 1 hour would be like two of them. And at I think at one point it was like, I think when Looking was on, Girls had finished and then they swapped.
Great.
But there was like always a duo of things. And it all, even though it was in that instance, it was a separate, obviously, series, just the stories worked so well together because it was all the same sort of themes and.
Yeah.
Even the way it was shot, like, it was all just, I loved having that, like, double yeah. bill rather than 1 full hour.
I mean, I think it's a nice, I think it's a nice thing because it's, I mean, I'm really conscious that Big Boys is coming straight after Derry Girls. And, you know, that has been kind of by design in a way. And I think that Big Boys wouldn't exist without Derry Girls. Like, I think Lisa has really paved the way for the level of writing that she's, you know, managed to like get on Channel 4 and do so brilliantly with. And you know, I'm really sort of I owe a huge debt to her and to what she's managed to create. And also, like, I also quite like the fact that, you know, Dylan in particular, his role in Derry Girls is very different, but he's just one of the most lovable people to watch on the screen. You just always root for him. And like, I mean, I've now, you know, known him about 4 years, and he's just one of these people who he will just put in like the extra mile. Like he speaks quite a lot about being dyslexic, and he gets scripts early so he can really learn everything. And you know when you just watch someone put in like the extra effort and your heart just melts for them? And like he went straight from shooting Big Boys to shooting Derry Girls. Like I don't even think he had like a day in between. He like flew from like London to Belfast, was on set rehearsing. And like, I don't know, it's just something about him. He just takes everything in his stride. And I think people are going to watch the show and really sort of fall for his depiction. And John Poynting as well, who plays Danny, I think, like, I really hope that a lot of queer viewers know that sort of lad's lad who actually is rooting for everyone, and on the surface of it looks like a bit of a basic FHM mag guy, but really at the core there's somebody very open-minded and somebody who's willing to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to sort of defending everyone and standing up for everyone. And I've met loads of straight men like that, and I feel conscious that I if I'm going to be depicting straight characters, they are the straight characters who I want to see more of. I want to see more allies on the screen being very like unashamedly allied. And you know, that's something that I'm quite proud of in the show.
I'm so excited to watch it.
So excited.
Thanks, guys.
When I saw the trailer, I was like, I sent it, I think I sent it straight to you, sent it to my boyfriend. I was just like, oh my God, this is like, especially I need to catch up on Derry Girls, but then that's next for me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Derry Girls is going to be after this, because I need to sit and I think I'm you re-watching can watch season two at the minute.
I'd love for them to have, I think that the Derry Girls Big Boys synergy is maybe similar to the Girls Looking synergy. Like there's a similarity in I suppose ambition and optimism between Derry Girls and this, and you know how we kind of can sort of celebrate friendship ultimately. Like, that's what both shows are at the core are about. Like I sat against the backdrop of a lot of shit going on, friendship is the solution, baby. Big Boys comes out on Thursday the 26th of May at 10 p.m. on Channel 4, episodes 1 and 2 all available on all 4 straight away afterwards, as is the Spotify playlist. Woo, what a plug. Thank
He's
you.
Done that before.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Jack, for joining us. It was bloody lovely.
Yeah, it was. Honestly, I've mentioned, but I'm very excited to get into all of those episodes, and such a beautiful, gorgeous cast as well.
Oh, stunning. For all those gagging to know, you can find Jack at Jack Dave Rook on Instagram and at Jack Rook on Twitter.
We hope you love that episode. We hope that you tune in to Channel 4 to watch the first episodes, and then all 4 to binge the rest of them following episode 2.
We'll add links to everything that we talk about on the website, and also most likely in the episode notes. So scroll down and click away.
Have a little click, click, click.
Yeah, and while you're there, click subscribe and 5 stars review. And then I think you'll be on your way.
Yeah. And don't forget, you can do that on either, but preferably both, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Yeah. And as we mentioned, we really do value every second that you take to do that little rating. And on again, if you do a review, you make a funny, what can we ask people to do in this one, Brendan?
Well, if you just do a review, we can we'll just shout it out. that'd be great. So if you want to be famous, rich and famous, then write a review,
because honestly, money can't buy having, you know,
fame and glamour.
Fame and glamour. You know, it's earned. So,
It's earned by doing the work, the Lord's work, which is writing reviews on podcast platforms.
Lord with an E. So, with that being said, that really is your. Have a gorgeous time until we come back with the next episode. which we're going to keep as a secret for now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know when it will be. But it will be soon because we are officially in season 4 now. So
yeah,
thank you so much for listening. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah.
If you're still listening, honestly, power to you.
Yeah, TikTok.
And
TikTok.
And don't forget, you're doing amazing, sweetie.
Love ya. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.